This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
It can be found online at the KBOO Community Radio Events page at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio continues the broadcast of the 2013 Illahi Lecture Series on Wednesday, May 8th, when we'll broadcast a talk by Jeffrey Clements.
An attorney and author, Jeffrey Clements is the co-founder of Free Speech for People, a national, nonpartisan campaign challenge, the creation of constitutional rights for corporations, overturn Citizens United versus FEC, and strengthen American democracy and self-government. Clements is the author of Corporations Are Not People.
Jeffrey Clements will be speaking at the First Congregational Church in Portland, and KBOO will broadcast the talk live at 7 p.m. Wednesday, May 8th. More information can be found at kboo.fm/Illahi2013.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Merrill Hurst University, the university for grown-ups, where it's never too late to earn a bachelor's or master's degree to achieve your dreams. Adults of all ages choose Merrill Hurst to gain knowledge from professors who practice what they teach. Now enrolling for fall term. Information at merrillhurst.edu/KBOO.
Good morning, good morning. I'm Joanne Hardesty, and welcome to Voices from the Edge. Today, we're going to talk about an innovative program at Portland Community College Cascade Campus called The Passage to Higher Education. I have here in the studio with me Noni Kasi, is that how you say it?
Mm-hmm.
Education specialist and program coordinator for the program, and I have Tony
Funches,
who is a mentor with the program. So welcome you both to the studio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you both here today. So let's just jump in. Why the passage to higher education? I mean, don't people just show up at college and they're all ready to go and, you know, they go to class and life is good? Isn't that the way college works?
We wish. Oh, so we wish. Joanne, it was strange how this program came about. I was a graduate student at PSU and in the last couple of years, and I had to do a comprehensive examination. And so you had to study a problem. And I started to look at the transfer rates because I went back to school after 40 years old, after having careers and children and jobs and businesses. And I had struggled. It took me 10 years. I came into the community college in 2002. And I remember feeling so afraid. I was scared. I never had a counselor. I kept like moving through because I didn't want to tell people I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't want to be embarrassed. I didn't want to be ashamed. So I just kept going. And I remember when I left PCC thinking, oh my God, I wish I would have known this. I wish I would have known that. So then I went to Linfield, and I remember feeling all alone because the higher up I got in my classes, the whiter the classes became. And here I am, many times the only African American in class, and felt like I, when anything happened around culture, they'd look at me like I was the expert on being black. Mm-hmm. And so when I was in my master's, I kept thinking, how many of us make it through this kind of institution? Mm-hmm. And I was following this study that said that African Americans come, usually traditionally, come into education through the community college. Mm-hmm. And in Portland, it looked like we came in at a rate of 6%, but we only transferred to universities at a rate of 1.5%.
Wow.
I know.
So you're losing quite a bit of the population through the community college process.
Yes.
And so what do you think those barriers are that so many who come in the door initially don't make it or don't graduate, right, from community college?
That's right, because we only have a graduation rate of about 4%. Of the African Americans that come to the community college. And some of the barriers that I've seen and that I studied, one is mentorship. Like, who am I looking at? Who can I see? Like, if I'm in these classes and they're getting whiter and I don't know, like, who can I look to that looks like me so I don't feel ashamed or embarrassed? That was one of the things I looked at. I also looked at social and cultural capital. If ain't nobody in my family ever been to college, then how am I supposed to know what meeting an advisor means or utilizing the services, whether it's disability services? I got halfway through and couldn't figure out why I wasn't reading like the way everybody else was reading. I had dyslexia, didn't even know it, but I, you know, didn't even want to ask either.
Halfway through your college, you figured
absolutely
out? Wow.
I mean, like, it was taking me three times as long to read books than anybody else. So I think like social cultural capital, mentorship, and just a place that I could be me and not feel that I was being judged or criticized, and a place to say that I could say I was scared, and others knew what I was talking about.
And so if you're just joining the conversation, I am talking with Noni Kalsi from the Portland Community College, the Passage to Higher Education program. If you'd like to join the conversation, if you've had these same experiences that you hear Nomi talking about, give us a call at 503-231-8187 and share with us what your support mechanism was to get through your college experience. So when I was preparing for this program, one of the things that I came across is, you know, all the data on public education, right? Mm. We graduate kids that can't read. We graduate kids that can't do math. We push them out into the criminal justice system. And so as I was preparing for this, I realized that there that the problems with the higher with our K through 12 system definitely transfer to our higher education system.
You hit exactly on what some of the challenges are.
And please introduce yourself, since I haven't heard you yet.
My name is Tony Funches, and I am one of the peer mentors with the Passage Program at Portland Community College Cascade Campus. So, as you just pointed out, we're graduating students who can't read, can't write, can't do math, and we're promoting them. Right. And that's a huge setup. Right. So then they come to college, and they are in these classes that they cannot compete in. And whether they're a traditional student right out of high school, a non-traditional student who's come back later in life, someone just coming to get some work skills, they're faced with challenges that they're not prepared for. And if they don't have the support systems in place, and they don't have the resources, and they don't know how to access and navigate the academic
environment,
it is very challenging. And so those students often, because they have no one that looks like them, that has been to college, there's no one in the home, as we talked about social and cultural capital, for them to refer to find guidance, they are often these lone vessels trying to survive the treacherous waters of academia. And that's very difficult. And so our program hopes to be a breathing space, a place where people can come and take a deep breath and exhale and realize there's someone else that can partner with me in this process. There's someone else that has had some success, and then I can learn from them.
You talked about, Joanne, when we pass these students and they show up in community college. It was when I was doing my research, what I found is that about 48% of the community colleges' developmental education, so I'm talking about classes under 100 level, are comprised of 48% of African Americans, which tells me is that they have huge gaping holes in their education when they come to the community college. And you know, so they sit in these classes and tend to struggle. And that's where we provide like the academic mentoring. So we have academic mentoring on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday in the evening. And they get to come and they get to see people just like them. And we're all struggling because I believe when you hear, you think, I'm going to go to community college and I'm going to get a degree in 2 years. Mm-hmm. Well, the truth is that 2 years doesn't apply to you if you are in developmental education, because it takes you a year or two to get through that process before you can even start on your prerequisites for anything else.
So tell me again about the, what did you just call this?
I called it developmental education.
Developmental education. We don't see that on any of the community college brochures that they're developing developmental education programs. So I'm kind of curious how, as a community member, I go to the college thinking, okay, anything I take, any courses I sign up for, right, are preparing me for my degree. So how do people get into developmental classes?
Well, they do just exactly as you said. You show up right. And you sign up. And as you're meeting with academic advisors, the academic advisors in our institution, some are full-time, mm-hmm. some are part-time, some are academic counselors. So depending on who you actually see does determine the level of service you receive. So students come in and they get a list of classes that they can take.
Right.
And unfortunately, because of the short amount of time that is available to meet with advisors of any level, whether it be part-time, full-time, academic, or a counselor, it's not a directed plan. It's not saying, this is what you need to take. Don't take anything else.
Right.
Follow this.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Until you get into programs such as ours, or another program at our campus is the Roots program. It's a federally funded TRIO program where you have academic advisors, you have mentors who come along and say, let's access some of the resources. Because mm-hmm. the resources are there. It's called the grad plan. When we all sign into our MyPCC, there's
right.
the grad plan. You
right.
can go in there, look and see what you need to take
right.
for yourself
right.
and take just those classes.
Right.
But students aren't being told that. So they come in and they meet with the academic advisor who gives them a list of classes to take, and they take that. And they often do. It often does take 2 years to get through Math 20, Math 65, Math 95, Writing 115, Writing 90. That list of classes will hold you up. And so the federal government has actually looked at that two-year time frame. And for some programs that have a two-year requirement for transitioning their students,
right.
those programs' bylaws have been rewritten because the federal government is acknowledging that it's taking longer for students to get through those courses.
So who I don't want to tell you how long I've been out of school, but I'm trying to get a visual. I'm, a 20-something community member decide, I'm working this dead-end job.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go to the community college.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get a degree, and then I'm going to go off and be prepared for a career, right? So somebody does an assessment of what my skill level is
mm-hmm.
when I first show
test.
Up.
Yes, you do a placement test, and based on your placement test is actually where you can start, because many of our 1 and 200 level classes have prerequisites, and you have to read at a certain level, or you have to understand math at a certain level. And so when you come in, and I'll take me, for instance, when I came in at 40 years old and had worked for many years and owned my own business, it wasn't that I wasn't intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
It was that I had not been in school for
a while.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
And so I tested in to developmental education.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started in Math 20, which was like 1 + 1 = 2. Then we went to times, tables, divisions, and covered all that basic math. And because of the math anxiety, I remember failing that class.
Mm-hmm.
And I started in reading and writing 80. Mm-hmm. Because even though I could type a letter and I had clerical assistance and I had run all these programs, I had not did academic writing
mm-hmm.
since I was probably a freshman
mm-hmm.
in high school. So I started there. And I remember, like, how do you do a verb and a this and a sentence structure? So it took me a minimum of a year to get through, just before I could even get to my 100 level classes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have to think, some people who have not been in school for a long time, it might take them 2 years to make it through developmental education. Because if you don't pass your math class, you got to take it. You got to come back and take it again. You got to keep coming back.
So there's no forward movement until you
get through these basic classes. Mm-hmm. And so what tends to happen, what I've seen and what I hope to support and help a student is I've seen students spin out in school and stay there 4 and 5 years and still don't have a degree, spend up a lot of their financial aid money, and then get discouraged and think, well, I'm not going to university. I don't have another 4 or 5 years to invest. And what happens is sometimes students will walk away, and I look at our population of students, they'll walk away with, you know, $20,000 worth of debt and no certificate and no degree.
Wow.
And no hope.
And to put the numbers into perspective, for just this past term, PCC averages about 10% black students identified. So those are the only ones who have checked the box.
Right, right.
So that's about 1,000 students.
Right.
Out of that 1,000, as Noni has pointed out, there's about 48% in developmental education. So we're talking almost 500. And of that, our report that we just ran, there was 273 in developmental education
who
failed. So we're talking about a fourth of the population. We're talking about 25% of the population is not passing developmental education. Not to say how many are not passing the rest of the educational process,
right,
or who have not identified as black who are not passing. But just with those numbers that we can actually tabulate, that shows the absolute need for a change of course, an investment in programs that are going to help those students. One of the things that we're doing, and when I say we're doing it with nothing. We're on margin money, which means imaginary money, basically. And we're doing it with almost a full course, a full team.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just using our personal resources, which is our drive and our commitment to education and success in ourselves and others. And what we're going to do is we're reaching out to that 270-some-odd students,
yep,
with sending emails, sending a postcard saying, hey, we have an academic program. We have an academic resource. We don't want you to walk away. We don't want you to quit. Because to know that you can't pass adding and subtracting and multiplication,
right,
regardless of where you are in life, whether you're an 18-year-old high school graduate or whether you're a 40-year-old mm-hmm. returning worker,
right,
that can be very devastating.
Yes.
And we're not promoting people.
Right.
We're not encouraging them to succeed when we allow them to fail. And not just fail once, but these are repeat. Not these numbers aren't particularly repeat of failures, but I personally know individuals. My mom, for one, she failed math 65 so many times. Mm-hmm. Before someone told her, you can take the series, which makes passing Math 65 easier. And so that's a waste of money. And she's mm-hmm. not the only one. Many of students repeatedly have to take math that we're spending money on.
503-231-8187. Do you have kids that you're thinking about sending to a community college? Are you thinking about going to community college yourself? Please give us a call and join the conversation. The number to call, 503-231-8187. And so you're going to have a community meeting tomorrow from 2 to 4 p.m., and what is the purpose of this community meeting that you're having tomorrow?
Well, I think it was a couple folds. Like, in June, our funding is ending. We were on a on margin money. That was margin money, which is a pot of money, I believe, that's left over from the community college. And it's and what they said is you can have these small dollars to do some innovative things. The money comes over after you have residuals that was left over from the community college, from tuition, I believe. And so I was thinking, wow, if we didn't get funded, what would I need to be able to keep this going?
Mm-hmm.
No matter what, mm-hmm. because we've touched over 300 students within the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. We've probably tracked about 225. And I have numbers that support this program is very effective. When students are engaged in learning communities and have resources, your participation goes up, which makes your grades go up, you know, and you feel good about yourself. So I had to think, like, what would I need if we had no dollars?
Right.
And I thought, one, we're looking for mentors. Mm. You know, like, what I don't see here in Portland a lot is a large community of African American, a pool where we can look and say, can you come and speak to us? Can you come over to PCC? Give these students some encouragement. Mm-hmm. Let them know that there's life after graduation. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe an internship, maybe a job shadow, mm-hmm. Something like that. So that was one. The next thing I was thinking of, maybe if I could develop some kind of an advisory committee. Mm-hmm. And I look at some of the African-American leaders in the community, like, give me some strategies. Like, mm-hmm. help us be able to help ourselves, mm-hmm. is basically what I was thinking. Mm-hmm. And the third thing was volunteers. Because most of us run on volunteer hours. There are a couple paid
staff members.
I'm a part-time staff member. Mm-hmm. And we wrote a small grant and got $2,000 from staff development. So we were able to hire a few peer mentors. Mm-hmm. But they only work 5 or 10 hours a week. Mm-hmm. And so if I could get, maybe there's a retired school teacher out there who would love to come and help our students read their papers or help them edit their papers. Mm-hmm. Or maybe there's a retired teacher who's a good math tutor. So I'm looking for our community to get involved. Sometimes I think we keep looking at this education system who maybe doesn't have what it needs to support us, but maybe we could support one
ourselves.
Another. Yeah.
Well, we have a caller, and so we're going to go to the phone line. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. Hello, Terry. Welcome to KBOO.
Thank you very much. I just want to let you know that I am not black. I am white. I'm 64 years old, and I have just started going to CCC.
Ah.
And in that process, I took a CS90 class, which is a computer science, learn how to turn your computer on class.
Right.
And at the end of the second day of class, my teacher assigned me a young tutor in the classroom, probably right out of high school would be my guess. And my issue with that is I don't mind having a tutor. A young tutor, that's not the point. The point is I'm paying the teacher to teach me,
right.
And she's assigning me a tutor. I had to drop the class because the class moved so fast, and I was so lost, and I've been out of school way more years than both of you people. I'm having some real troubles with that concept of going back to college and trying to learn. And like you said, I've got lots of life experience, so mm-hmm. it's not that I'm an idiot. It's just
right.
that it's so complicated, and you have to know the computer to be able to even go to college.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for your call. You've raised some really interesting questions, because mm-hmm. I do think that supposedly we're all lifelong learners nowadays, mm-hmm. regardless of whether we're inside an institution or not. And you would think the college environment would have evolved enough so that no matter what demographic group you come from, that the college atmosphere would adapt to accommodate lifelong learners, because that's supposedly our goal. Thank you so
much. I agree.
Yeah, thank you so much for your call, and
thank
good
you.
For you for going back to school at 60-something. Mm-hmm. I think that's
thank
wonderful.
You.
Have a great
thank
day.
You.
And don't let that discourage you. That may not have been the class for you or the instructor for you.
Mm-hmm. I get it.
Don't let that discourage you from going back. There's a class out there with an instructor that will make learning easy. And
thank
you. You're welcome. Have a great day.
All right, bye.
Absolutely. There's at our campus and at PCC, we have several transition programs. And what that means is, for instance, I also teach in a program called Project Independence, which is a returning women's program. And I wish they also had it for men, so returning mm-hmm. students,
right.
because that's another issue when you get over a particular age coming back to school. Had it not been for that program that supported me, because that's where I started, mm-hmm. Supported me and gave me the encouragement to continue on, I may not have completed my degree. Mm-hmm. And within that program, it actually kind of says, hey, let's look at, you haven't been in school in a long time. Let's look at college success survival. Let's look at our career goals. Here's some introduction to the computer. Here's the on button, the off button. And then actually, there's several components of programs like that. And I know they have them out at CCC, and we have one, I believe, on every campus at PCC. But there needs to be more. I mean, in this day and age, there are a lot of returning students that are coming back to school because of the economy. And I was looking, PCC has 7 access programs for students 16 to 25. Seven access programs.
Wow.
But we have very few retention programs or transition programs.
Right. Well, which doesn't pass the logic test, right? You would think that if you are reaching out to populations who are unaccustomed to being in a college environment, that you would want to have a goal of retention so that those people, whether they're young people or old people who are, and I say old as me because I'm old, old people going back in the school, you would think the goal would be to graduate them so they mm-hmm. end up actually investing in their own future.
Absolutely.
So the community awareness meeting that's yes. going to take place tomorrow is going to be at PCC Cascade.
Yes.
And where is that going to be at PCC Cascade, you know?
It'll be in Terrell Hall, room 112.
Terrell Hall, room 112.
It is located right off of the backside of our campus, so it's easy street access. Mm-hmm. It's near the auditorium. Not the large auditorium off of Albina Street, but the smaller auditorium, more towards the heart of the campus.
Right. So it's right next to the arts building, right? If people, it's
next to the admissions building.
Yes. Admissions building.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Excellent. So Terrell Hall, 2 to 4 tomorrow. And you're inviting the community to come in and
absolutely. If you want to know more about the program, what we do, there will be some students there, and you can talk to them about their experience. You can look at different ways that you may want to involve yourself. But most of all, you'll get to see at that meeting, I'll show what I can't talk about here, some of the numbers. Like when we start to look at the numbers of people that we are not reaching or that are failing their classes. Like out of that 48% that are in developmental education, when I pull reports, 45, 46, 55% of those are failing their classes.
Well, I mean, I think it's great that there's a way to track what's happening with students that come in. The question is that, what happens after they fail the course? Did they just get told, well, you got to buy another course?
Exactly.
You got to pay for it again?
Yes.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is one of the challenges,
right.
is you fail the class,
right.
you have to pay to take it again. And it's tricky because if you don't understand all of the dynamics of financial aid and financial
right.
literacy and the
right.
federal government,
right.
it can be cumbersome because in some instances, it is better to take an F
mm-hmm.
in a class. So then that way your financial aid will be released to pay for that class again versus taking a D in that class, because the institution will see a D as a non-passing grade while federal government sees the D as a passing grade. So there's all these small tricky pieces about how to access this money so that way we can afford our education.
Right.
One point that I'd like to make is that we're not saying community college is not a great opportunity.
Absolutely.
We're not saying that that there's something deficient in mm-hmm. using community college. We're just saying that there are challenges mm-hmm. and that we're trying to help meet those challenges as there's challenges in any aspect of
right.
any situation in life.
Well, and of course we know that with as I started the program, with our current state of public education
mm-hmm.
exactly.
in the state, we are graduating kids that are ill-prepared for life, much less like for community college
mm-hmm.
or additional educational opportunities. And so what advice would you give to either parents who are listening, who their kids are about to start off on their track with community college, or for people who are going back to school as a an older adult, mm-hmm. what advice would you give people to prevent them from getting into this spiral that makes them take the same stuff over and over and over again and not actually be advancing their educational opportunities?
I think it's several pieces, mm-hmm. and you began to touch on them. We're talking about our educational system here in the state of Oregon. It's totally underfunded. Before the legislature mm-hmm. right now is an ask for millions upon millions of dollars for K through 12, higher education, community college, and the Oregon Opportunity Grant. Specifically, the numbers for higher education, meaning the university system, is $850 million.
Right.
For community colleges themselves, is $510 million. And for the Oregon Opportunity Grant, it's a $15 million bump to $115 million. I point those numbers out because they're all very they're very strategic. Mm-hmm. They've identified the number of students that we can help. For example, the $15 million bump for the Oregon Opportunity Grant, which is Oregon's only need-based scholarship,
right.
that $15 million will meet the needs of 7,000 students.
Hmm.
The reason why that's so important is because the Oregon Opportunity Grant right now, even though the money is there, it can only fund 20% of those that are eligible to receive it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's 80% of those individuals who have been awarded or been determined eligible for this need-based funds that they can never access.
Mm-hmm.
Why I'm talking about money is because if we don't invest in our educational system, then our K through 12, we're
right.
preparing students who are ill-prepared for life,
right.
for college, and then they come to the community college that then has to put them in developmental education
mm-hmm.
to bring their skill level up so that they can then begin to take college level courses,
mm-hmm.
then progress on to the 4-year institution so that they can obtain a bachelor's or a master's, a higher degree, to make them competitive in
right.
the job market.
Right.
So it's a complete, from the financial aspect, it's a complete investment in the entire educational process. You can't fund one without the other.
Right.
You fund K through 12 and don't fund the supportive systems of that, then you've wasted your K through 12 money. You fund the supportive system on the other end, but then you're constantly having to pour money into that because you didn't properly fund the first part.
Right. But of course, in Oregon, we'd rather fund jails than to fund higher yep. education, because we spend more money on jails than we do higher education.
Perfect example of that is the Department of Corrections is asking for $600 million to build a new prison for a projected 2,300. So let's follow these numbers. $600
right.
million
right.
for a projected 2,300 individuals
right.
who have not committed a crime,
yet.
Who have not done anything yet, who
right.
may not even exist,
right.
while we're only asking for $15 million to serve 7,000
right.
now.
Right. Well,
the reason why that's important
no,
is...
No, I get that.
The reason why that's important is because then when people go to school, they have the resources to focus and be successful
right.
in college. We have to remove those barriers to help them find the success once they reach academia.
So we're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Sean. Welcome to K-Boot.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I can't remember the exact numbers, but I think I read somewhere that in the entire nation of Germany, there's something like 12 institutions of higher learning, and in the United States, there's something like 2,000. And the point of that comment is that I think in the United States we tend to fetishize higher education. It helps perpetuate the myth of a merit-based society.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people would be shocked to know how many white men, for example, are in positions of management who have very little or no education whatsoever.
Right.
But we perpetuate this myth
mm-hmm.
that a college degree is a path into the middle class when really, there's a lot of other things going on there, so I was just hoping your guests might comment on that. Thank you so much.
Appreciate the call. He raised a really good point because, I mean, you know, when I first graduated high school, you could get a doctorate degree
mm-hmm.
for like $40,000, right?
Yeah,
it, right. It just went right through a 4-year, then went through a doctorate program. You know, you
yes.
could, for $40,000, right? I mean, the cost of a home at that time
oh,
is what
my goodness.
You could pay. But today, in addition to being ill-prepared to walk into a higher education environment, the amount of debt that kids have to take on in order to even start the process. So when you tell me that 48% are in a remedial program, and so they're like in a pre-college program while they're in college, but meanwhile they're already taking out loans. They're they're going through the process to actually pay for something that may be an illusion down the road.
Absolutely. You know, I was thinking about what the caller just said, Sean. Thank you. One of the things that I happened to be sitting in a conference one day, and I thought, really. Is this master's degree really worth it? And the speaker said, did you know that in the year 2020, 70% of the jobs in this country will require a higher education degree? And she said, 70%. And I thought, how is that possible?
Right.
And then she went to explain that today there's 10,000 baby boomers per day leaving the workforce.
Oh, right.
So as these baby boomers who did not have a college education,
right.
who had a GED or just got those good government jobs and all of that, those people are on their way out.
Right.
And as they leave, their jobs, we'll just change job description and put a degree requirement on it.
That's right.
And part of our program, traditionally, African Americans do not access higher education at the same rate as everyone else.
Right.
And so if I look and think it, I look for my children or my grandchildren, and I look at that year 2020 and 70% of the jobs are going to require a higher education degree, I want them to have an opportunity.
Right.
And so whether it's an illusion or whether it's getting ready to be fact, if I don't prepare them now, in 8 years, who do I have to blame?
Yeah.
I agree. Like, I agree with the caller. I owe a lot of money on my student loans, a lot. However, when I lost my job, because when they laid us all off, they told us to reapply for our jobs.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't apply for my job that I had been doing for over 15 years in my community because I didn't have a bachelor's degree. And the girl that I was training, who was a Vista volunteer, got my job. And so it was like a curse and a blessing. It pushed me into education. And now I get to share that experience because we will look around in a couple years and things will change.
Well, and quite frankly, I mean, even the city of Portland is talking about a third of their workforce is going to retire in the next 5 to 10 years,
right?
So it's really consistent with what you're talking about is the baby boomer generation is retiring out. But I got to ask the question. I mean, I think you're absolutely right that these every job announcement you see, just about, even if it's for a barista,
that's right.
It appears to want a college degree.
Correct.
And I think, and I know for me, my entire life, there have been jobs that I've applied for that have asked for a high-level college degree that I didn't have, and I just ignored the request, right? Because, you know, I was confident that I had the skills to do the job without the paper that they were looking for. And most of the times I got it, right? I got the job. But thinking about the current economy, and thinking about where we're moving as an economy, it's really scary to think. I mean, it's like I tell kids in school now, you can either get a education or you can buy a house. But in your lifetime, you won't be able to do both. So you got to decide now, what your priority is.
Yes.
Because if you're graduating with the debt, I mean, my parents, you know, bought their first big home for like $12,000. That was like an 8-bedroom house, right? You know, with like a half acre, you know, it's like $25,000, right? Well, today, if you graduate from school with $25,000 to $40,000 debt, that's always the top priority, because you got to start paying that stuff off almost immediately.
We're talking like $50,000. Let's start at $50,000. Right. Like, yes.
I was trying to be conservative, you're right.
Let's start at $50,000.
So, and is that a 4-year degree, or is that still a 2-year college?
That's 6, because you do the 2 years of developmental education at community college,
right?
And then you do the 2 years of actual college work on the community college,
right?
And then complete your 4-year at a 2-year institution. So it's looking at 6 years. Mm-hmm. The average community college student graduates with about $28,000 in debt prior to even pursuing a higher education degree, bachelor's mm-hmm. degree. And so,
if you get out of community college with almost $30,000
in debt, $30,000
in debt, and then you're looking at, do I really want to invest to go 2 more years?
You have to, because the jobs.
Associates really is becoming the same thing as
a high school diploma.
And a high school diploma is becoming the same thing as a GED. So as our economy changes and the challenges that we have to face, our degree requirements, they continue to have to shift. And so really, as you were saying, job announcements, you got to have a bachelor's to answer the telephone
$9.95
for half a day.
That's right.
So as the comment back to the parents, what's important is that, one, you stay aware of what's going on in our community. Mm-hmm. We need to fund education.
Right.
Two, you need to be active in your child's college pursuit. My son's getting ready to go to college. We're talking about colleges all the time. We're going on college visits. He comes with me to different college events so he can become aware. That's
wonderful.
Important that students are aware.
Mm-hmm.
Then you need to find out what resources are available at mm-hmm. the institution.
Yes.
And being engaged, making sure that your child is checking off all the boxes, making sure that they're getting the right
information.
Mm-hmm. Not just showing up. I mean, it's a detriment that we have at our institution is that you show up and you spend 2 hours waiting to see an academic advisor for 15 minutes.
Whoa.
In this economy, in this day and time, no one has 2 hours to waste.
That's right.
Or wait.
Right.
And to get 15 minutes and then that be incomplete. So it's important that for parents that they monitor all of that. Then mm-hmm. for returning adults, mm-hmm. it's important that you be a self-starter. Have some initiative and take you're taking the leap of faith to come to college. Mm-hmm. Take that next step and find resources and individuals on campus that you can connect with. Mm-hmm. That's why we try to be visible.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we're placed in the Women's Resource Center, men are welcome there.
Mm-hmm.
It's become like a community hub, really. Us as student leaders, we have to be visible. We have to, so people can connect with us and say, oh, I know that person.
Right.
And may not know us, but know what we do.
Mm-hmm.
So that way they can point themselves or others to us to access us as resources.
And so a lot depends on who that academic advisor is that you initially meet with and their perception of who you are what your skill set is.
Yes.
And so how do we make sure that academic advisors are culturally competent and aware of community life skills as compared to an academic track that, you know, I mean, most of our kids don't do a traditional route, right?
Mm-hmm.
They, they may be organizing at church on Sunday.
Yes.
And have a lot of organizing skills, a lot of leadership skills that wouldn't be apparent unless you were actually in church with them on Sunday,
correct.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what is the quality of the academic advisors, and are they advising people right? Because that would be the other thing. I mean, if somebody's telling you to take these courses when you actually need those courses to graduate, why? And so I asked several questions. And
yes.
I see the eye language. The people are listening can't see the nonverbal cues that are taking place in this room, but I will stop now and give you both of you. That was a mouthful, wasn't it?
It was a loaded question.
Very loaded.
And I don't stress yourself out, but help me understand.
You want to start?
Well,
and I'll pick up.
Oh, my goodness. So many issues. First of all, when we talk about cultural competency, we have to go all the way to the hiring process.
Mm.
We have to remove that insufficient question of, do you value diversity? Because that means nothing. It means nothing, because what it really means is, do you want a job?
Right.
And so
right.
the answer is yes, regardless of what your background, your bigotry, mm-hmm. your cultural
That's
competency
right.
is, that question needs to be removed, and we need to develop cultural competency measures and methods to identify individuals who have empathy and sympathy to be able to identify the various challenges that our diverse cultures bring.
Yes.
That means that when we move past hiring, that means they need to have continual education right. and training.
Exactly.
But that requires funding, so we keep having to go back to that. And so it's the timing thing. And then once we're there, you have to be dogmatic. And you have to say, I'm not getting up from here till you help me.
Right.
And that's difficult in 15 minutes.
Well, and let me just say that funding is the excuse that you use to not educate our kids in the K through 12 system. But I'm old enough to have been in the system when it was flush with money and when it's been suffering for money. So no matter what the monetary investment, kids of color have been failed by our public education system.
Absolutely.
And so I don't allow or accept the argument that it's the money that creates the inequity in our education system. Because
it's the system.
It is the system. The system is not set up. The system is set up to accommodate a certain type of student.
Absolutely.
And that student isn't a student of color, is not a student from the neighborhood, is not a student that has life experiences.
Mm-hmm.
It's a traditional, white, middle-class, educated youth is what our public education systems are set up to support. It's not set up to support. And
absolutely.
So you had some other comments to add about the...
I was thinking about the advising.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's true. And I can always go back to my personal experience, is if I don't see nobody that look like me, sometimes I don't believe you got my best interest in mind.
Uh-huh.
So therefore, I look to my peers, right? And they tell me things. And so what happens is our students tend to talk to each other and make decisions, which are not always the correct decision.
Right.
And that's one of the purposes of our program, is when you see one of us from the passage, like, we know, okay, go talk to Noni, go talk to Tony. We have a meeting, an African-American women's networking support group, the first Friday of every month. We have a Black men's support group, the third Friday of every month.
Oh, so and good. So you're actually doing men too.
Absolutely. This year we launched a male version of this program, and it's the Passage to Higher Education for Academic Excellence for Black Males.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been so phenomenal, Joanne. These men have just stepped up, showed up. They're doing things with one another. They meet. They even have support from other institutions. I see other Black men coming over from PSU. I see our staff and faculty, Black males, stepping in and supporting these brothers. It has been phenomenal.
Yes. So that's wonderful. I'm so glad to hear that, because, you think Black women got it tough.
Yes, absolutely.
I can imagine that Black men have it significantly
we're
harder.
Traditionally not a culture that asks for help.
Right.
Like,
right.
You know, it hasn't always been in our best interests.
Right.
And so we will tend to struggle, and that's it with the academic advising. I'd rather not talk to them. If I go inside of me and think of the students that we serve, I hear things like, I don't want to talk to them. Well, I'm just going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to so-and-so, and they said.
Right.
And so what we try to do is say, okay, you're here. Use all the resources possible, and then come back, share the information.
Right.
Let's see if this is really going to work for you. Because you're right. Like, they may not know some of the barriers you have at home.
Right.
That they're not going to tell you in that 15 minutes.
That's right.
That's
right.
Going to help you make the decision whether I'm going to take math this term because my child is incarcerated and this is going on and I got bad health, or whether I need to take a writing term, or whether I need to go full time, or whether I need to go part time because of my life circumstances.
Exactly.
And so the good part is when you build the community, we get to come and be that, we get to listen to the other side of the story. Yes, you need financial aid, but maybe you should think about this instead of taking full time because it's only maybe saving $300, $500.
Right.
Is it worth the stress if you're going through this, this, and this?
Right.
So where you don't get the cultural competency maybe from the academic advising. You get it from the passage.
Uh-huh.
And that's the whole purpose. It's kind of like that each one teach one.
Mm-hmm.
And you show up and we're going to make sure you feel at home. We're going to make sure you have what you need.
So I want to use our last few minutes to talk a bit about the meeting, who you're inviting, what you hope to get out of the meeting, and kind of what the how do you see the future of the Passage program? Mm-hmm. And so we've just got about 5 minutes left.
Ooh.
And so the meeting is coming up tomorrow from 2 to 4 at PCC, Terrell Hall, room
112.
If you want to know what the Passage, because we serve women, but now we've launched this Black Men's program. If you want to know how to get involved, if you want to know who the students are, if you want to know what the needs of the program, please show up. In the beginning, I just looked at the African-American leaders in the community, and I thought that would help. And I thought, you know what? I need our allies lining up with us right now. I need other students to come because what we need are people who are invested. Joanne, like, I'm here. I'm from here. I've been here. I went to Humboldt, King, Chapman, Lincoln. I'm here. I'm invested in my community. Mm-hmm. I'm not going anywhere.
Right.
And I need others that are invested in this community, that want to see our students succeed,
yes,
to show up. Mm-hmm. And I know sometimes we get our professional jobs and we go off and make our $100,000, but there's still somebody in community college that needs to see your face. So please come back, be a speaker, come back, be a mentor, come back. I think we look at K through 12, but we got some folks 18 through 80 that need,
yes,
support.
Yes,
that's right.
So that's what the meeting on Friday is about for me. In our future, you'll see a whole future plan, the next 5 years laid out there at, because there's not enough time. Mm-hmm. Tony, you want to say something?
Our program, our plan for tomorrow is to really give an overview of what the problem is, what the need is, how we plan to meet that need, and how the community can help us in meeting that need.
Mm-hmm.
We've reached out to the community. We've had somewhat of a good response as to those that have RSVP'd. Mm-hmm. If you received a letter from us and you haven't RSVP'd, please do so.
Stop hounding me. I keep getting those emails.
So we can get you a complimentary parking pass because our campus is going through our bond construction. So, yes, it's really important that you come out to this meeting tomorrow if you can make it. 2 to 4 at Portland Community College, Cascade, Terrell Hall, room 112. Or you can also, if you can't make it, please give us a call at 971-227-8987. No.
No, that number's wrong. The number is
971-722-5249-5842.
Call PCC.
Our
number has changed. I'm in the Women's Resource Center.
Okay.
And my number is 971-722-5842.
Yes, that's right.
That's the correct number.
I also have your email,
yes,
on both my website, on the KBOO website, as well as my Facebook page. So for more information, I could email you
absolutely
at your email address.
And I'll send out some information.
Wonderful. And so I will not be able to make a meeting tomorrow, but I do want to put you on notice that I would be very happy to come and speak at any time.
Yay!
And participate and do what I can to help. Because it does take a village.
That's it. That's what it's
and
about.
We're part of the village, and it's our responsibility to make sure that our kids have this opportunity. And I want to thank you because I think too often, because of the small numbers, the African-American population just kind of seems invisible.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we talk about education, normally when we're talking about even higher education, we're normally talking about failure.
Mm-hmm.
But we have very few programs that are talking about providing a wraparound support,
yes,
to ensure the success of our students.
Absolutely.
So I really thank you.
And if I may, just one.
You may?
Our two programs, our first Friday with the women, third Friday with the men, is open to not just students, but the community as well. So please come out, support the program, come and find support from others like you. that's what that opportunity is for. It's focused towards students, but we do have an open dialogue, and it's open and affirming to our community to come and join and partner with us.
Yes.
And I can see how that would be affirming, just to have community members coming in, mm-hmm. just saying, you know it's tough now, but, you know, it's always tough at this point, but we can see the light at the end of the tunnel.
We can see the light, and if you educate us, then we can reach back to the K-12 to say, look, we just did it. You guys can, too. Like, it's constant, and the past is the name alone has a purpose for ours, for African Americans. And we serve, you know, people say, well, I'm not African American, I'm black. Well, you can be black, you can be African American, you can be African Latino, you can come from the motherland. Just come. We serve all students of African descent.
This passage refuses to let anybody die.
That's right.
We're here to be a supportive system so that way during this passage, no one has to fail, no one has to get left behind, nobody has to die.
Tony, you and I have known each other for a long, long time, so it's so wonderful to see you in higher education, committed to helping other people get their education, interning at legislative offices. I mean, you got it going on. So it's a pleasure to see that that life is good for you at the moment.
It is.
And
what
a model you are for your kids. So this is Joanne Hardesty. You have been listening to Voices from the Edge. It's been my pleasure to be here with you today. We'll see you next week. Same time, same place, same station. Have a great day.
Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth.
Morning from KBOO Portland. It is Thursday morning, 9 o'clock. Coming up in a half hour at 9:30, listen to a deeper look to learn about the transformed U.S. military and intelligence apparatus with Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Mark Mazzetti on his new book, The Way of the Knife, The CIA, A Secret Army, and A War at the Ends of the Earth. Then at 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, hear Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11 today on Between the Covers, host David Naiman interviews celebrated author Karen Russell, who was nominated for the Pulitzer Prize in Fiction last year for her debut novel, Swamplandia. And at 11:30, it's The Film Show with Jen Chavez and SW Conser. Thanks, KBU members, for your generous support in our membership drive. That's all coming up this morning. But next, it is Teresa Mitchell with Press Watch, news you're not supposed to know. And that's coming up next on KBU.
Percent of Oregon's prison population return to their communities. This includes people convicted of a sex crime. Many people convicted of a sexual offense want to change their behaviors and seek treatment in our communities. April 29th on Prison Pipeline, a sex therapist explains public misperceptions of and treatment for persons convicted of sex crimes. She'll tell about the lost opportunity to educate a Southeast Portland community after the neighborhood's harsh criticism forced her to move her clinic. That's Prison Pipeline, April 29th at 6:30 p.m.
We'll be right back. Corporations are not people. Money is not speech. Author and radio show host Tom Hartman is referring to a growing movement in this country to pass a 28th Amendment to the Constitution. On Friday, April 26th at 7 p.m., Hartman returns to Portland to speak on We the People, not We the Corporations. That's at the First Unitarian Church at Southwest 12th Avenue and Main Street. He will also be speaking in Salem on Saturday, April 27th at 1 p.m. at the Grand Theater on Northeast High Street. You can refer to the KBOO Community Events page for more information or firstunitarian.org.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New mobile applications available for iPhone and Android. For more information, you can visit pdxgyp.com.
Also, thanks to a grant from Merrill Hurst University's new Bachelor of Arts in Media and Film Studies, where you can explore how media in all forms affect not only how we view the world, but how we shape it. You'll learn the power of media and how you can use that power to become a participant in change. Now accepting applications. Details at merrillhurst.edu/KBOO.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for the news you're not supposed to know. Starting with this morning, there is news that Israel is saying that they have intercepted a drone off the Haifa coastline. There was a drone in October from Hezbollah, and I believe last April, Israel had sent a drone over Hezbollah in Lebanon. This from Xinhua Chinese News. An Israeli Air Force F-16 fighter jet downed a drone off the coastline of the northern city of Haifa at noon today. It would be local time. The drone has apparently made its way into Israel's airspace from the north. When I say local time, I mean local Jerusalem time. They write, the drone is believed to have been operated by Hezbollah. Meanwhile, they say Lebanese media outlets reported that Israeli Air Force aircraft have been spotted over southern Lebanon. Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, who was visiting the Druze community up north, said the IDF was prepared for any challenge. He said, quote, "We are tracking this issue with great concern in light of what is happening in Syria and Lebanon," end quote. Now, looking at, departing from that and looking at the Lebanese and Israeli media, I didn't find anything in Lebanese media about Israeli Air Force aircraft. It could be that I did not look at the right ones. This is just news that is just breaking in the last hour or so.